Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of whether or not the US and Russia, let alone the Syrian parties themselves, will be able to come to an agreement over peace talks on Syria. Former White House Middle East advisor Ambassador Mark Ginsburg joins us to discuss Russia's insistence that Iran join the international conference and remarks from Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov cautioning against arbitrary deadlines, implying Secretary of State John Kerry is getting ahead of himself. Then we look into today's annulment by Guatemala's highest court of the verdict of genocide against General Rios Montt, who was sentenced to 80 years for the deaths of 1,700 of the 200,000 Mayan Indians murdered by the Guatemalan military. Anita Isaacs, a professor of social sciences and political science at Haverford College and author of The Politics of Transitional Justice in Postwar Guatemala, joins us to discuss her recent article at the New York Times, "We Enabled Genocide, But the Elite Committed It." Then finally, we'll speak with Lee Shepard, a contributing editor of Tax Notes, who was recently named one of the Global Tax 50 most influential players in international taxation by the International Tax Review. We'll discuss today's hearings before the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, where the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, was grilled over avoiding $9 billion in taxes in 2012 and keeping billions of Apple's profits in Irish subsidiaries to avoid paying U.S. taxes. And joining us now is Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, who's a former presidential advisor and United States ambassador to Morocco. He served as a legislative assistant to Senator Edward Kennedy, special assistant to the Secretary of State, deputy senior advisor to the President for Middle East Policy, a special U.S. coordinator for Mediterranean Trade, Investment, and Security Affairs, and he serves as a special advisor to the Department of Defense Special Operations Command and an advisor to the United States Department of State on outreach initiatives to the Muslim world. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ambassador Mark Ginsburg.
It's quite a mouthful. Thank you.
It is indeed. And the current Secretary of State, John Kerry, seems to have his hands full at the moment. I believe on Wednesday he meets in Jordan to try and shore up the Syrian opposition, or at least to find people that will talk to the Assads, assuming that the Russians can join the Assads, and now the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, is warning the United States against setting arbitrary deadlines for an international conference, which they appear to have agreed to. So what do you think is happening here in terms of the possibility of even having peace talks about Syria?
I think it's hard to decipher what exactly the Russians have in mind here. When the Secretary went to the Middle East and then ultimately met with Foreign Minister Lavrov, he had already gotten a pretty good indication how much the Russians were willing to buy into this idea of a conference and whether or not they could compel anybody to attend. Part of the deal here is that I think the personal collegiality between Secretary Kerry and Mr. Lavrov is well understood. What is less well understood is how much do the Americans understand how far the Russians are willing to go in compelling Assad to attend a conference where the preconditions are everyone agreeing that he's not going to be forced from power anytime soon.
Well, but that assumes that the Russians can influence Assad, and that's not entirely clear, is it? Or how much
no,
they
it
can.
Isn't. I mean, at this point in time, the battle, the situation on the battlefield is shifting dramatically to his favor, and the bare knuckled terrorism that Hezbollah and Iranian Revolutionary Guards are bringing against the Syrian opposition military forces is already self-evident by the battles that are taking place and the retreating that is taking place as a result. I mean, we're talking about ruthless 8th century type of indiscriminate fighting that is taking place.
Well, and also, you know, on the other side, we're hearing from Hezbollah themselves, and there's been an unprecedented number of funerals in Lebanon as a result of this fighting, that the Hezbollah fighters are saying that the rebels fight to the bitter end. Even after you shoot them, they still come at you. So both sides are absolutely involved in absolutely taking no quarter.
Well, this is a battle. This is what we call a duel to the death.
So
the fact is that you have right now not the moderate what I would call what's being lost here is not that you have a battle between moderate, secular, well-trained, Western-oriented military forces who are controlling the battlefield. You've got the radical Shiite terrorist organizations of Hezbollah and the Revolutionary Guards Corps of Iran fighting the Al-Qaeda-leaning terrorist-designated al-Nusra Front. And these two, this is the scorpion and the mongoose in a bottle.
Well, what about this notion that I'd heard from a journalist in Lebanon who has written a book about Hezbollah, and he said that I don't know whether this is what people are thinking in Lebanon or in the region, but he suggested that, you might recall Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, Henry Kissinger's famous remark about the Iran-Iraq war, it's a pity that both sides can't lose. Is there a sense that these murderous people are going at it and we're just going to sort of sit back and let them do it until they get exhausted?
Well, if you were to ask me what is the Obama administration's policy, I'd say you just put the nail on the head, hit the nail on the head. The hand-wringing that is going on around the world over the escalating humanitarian catastrophe belies the fact that in the end, other than funneling arms to this, that, or the other group and communications equipment and what have you, what passes as a policy at this point in time is essentially asking the Russians to deliver Assad to the more secular opposition, and they ain't going to do that.
So we won't even get to having the fig leaf of a peace talk, is that?
No, I'm not saying we won't.
Right.
I'm saying that you haven't even reached the table yet. This is going to be hearkening back to the days of the negotiations in Paris between Henry Kissinger and the famous Vietnamese negotiator.
Lee Duc Tho.
Lee Duc Tho, where they spent weeks, if not months, arguing over the shape of the table and who was going to be sitting there. I mean, the Russians insist, for example, that Iran be at the table. The Americans and the other Arab states do not. Well, is there going to be an Iranian representative there, and are they going to come up with some nice little finessing diplomatic compromise to designate that Iranian representative as an observer? I mean, who knows? But this is what we're at right now.
Again, I'm speaking with Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, a former presidential advisor and U.S. ambassador to Morocco, who serves as special advisor to the Department of Defense Special Operations Command and an advisor to the United States Department of State on outreach initiatives to the Muslim world. Well, this is sounding more like, to me, Ambassador Ginsburg, that's the personal relationship that John Kerry has with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, that has led to the announcement of a peace talks. But they're a long way. No wonder Lavrov is saying that we shouldn't put artificial deadlines. This is worse than herding cats, right? You not only do neither side agree on who should be at the table, the two people that you're trying to bring to the table won't even talk to each other, and it's not likely they will.
I think it's important for Secretary Kerry and his staff, who I have great affection and admiration for, to be very careful about making statements to the public, presupposing situations and acts on the facts on the ground, notwithstanding the best of intentions. And this has happened not just in the Secretary's initial forays into obtaining support for a peace conference on Syria, but has also occurred in his statements that have emerged from his meetings in Palestine and Israel. Unbridled enthusiasm is something that we respect and admire in the Secretary, but there's a point in time where his credibility is going to be placed at the test when he comes out and announces that this is going to occur, and then the Russians turn around and say, hold it now, that's not on the script. It leaves the Secretary exposed.
So in other words, he should not be too quick to express his wishes and hopes, but only go public when there's a concrete deal.
Well, exactly. I mean, in the end, I think, as I said, this secretary's new at the job, and he's a former senator, and there's a lot of consequences to the statements that he's making, and I want them to get it right. I really want the team to get it right. I don't want them to be placed in a position where American credibility, which is already completely vanished in among Syrians. I mean, if we are creating some sort of illusion here that by making these statements and by meeting with the Russians, we're going to curry favor back with the Syrians who are absolutely disgusted with American policy, forget it. It ain't going to happen.
Well, but one of the things that I find extraordinary about the situation, Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, is the duplicity of our Saudi so-called friends who are funding the Salafists, which are essentially the real fighting force, from what I understand, is the al-Nusra people, the hardline people that are getting the Saudi arms. We're not giving much to the secular opposition. They've been marginalized. What's Saudi Arabia want there? Do they want an al-Qaeda on the Mediterranean?
Well, that's a very good question, Ian, because it's not merely the reports of the Saudis that are doing this, but our allies who hosted peace conferences in their host country, the Qataris, who are doing the same. If anything, I suspect the Qataris are far more diabolical in funneling arms to the al-Nusra front than the Saudis have been. Although it's hard to sit back here in Washington and quantify this, and don't take it from me. I'm merely reporting back to you what I'm reading in the Arab media and from listening to my colleagues in the Pentagon. I think the best way to describe it is there's no Arab country that has clean hands in providing arms to the anti-Assad forces now.
Well, on the other side, the Russians, we know the Iranians are doubling down. Hezbollah's in there fighting for this key town that it looks like it's going to fall, and it looks like a major reversal in favor of the Assads. The Russians, my understanding is that 1 in 5 industrial jobs in Russia are in the arms industry, and they've sold billions to Syria, and they're doubling down too. They're threatening to bring in these anti-ship missiles, which are probably aimed at the Israeli Navy. So just Lavrov aside, what do you think's going on with Putin? Is he really that cynical that he's really more interested in selling arms?
Absolutely. Putin is absolutely cynical when it comes to Syria. Syria has traditionally been one of the major arms purchasers from Russia. In fact, I would put it in the top 5 countries that have purchased arms from Russia and has provided its oil revenue back for these arms purchases. So that's point one. Point two, the Russians have a geostrategic military stake in the Assad regime because they have their largest Mediterranean naval base in Syria in a town called Tartus, just near Latakia, Latakia in Arabic. And not only that, the Russians have always been a traditional ally of the Assads. And let's not forget, Mr. Putin is looking at his doorstep in the Southern Caucasus, and he sees a bunch of Sunni terrorist fighters fighting for succession against Russia. And we already had a little bit of this taste from Boston at the Marathon attack, where the place is overrun. Dagestan is Dagestan is the most dangerous country in Europe. And what Putin fears is that if Syria falls into the hands of al-Qaeda, al-Nusra organizations and becomes a Sunni terrorist state, it only makes his life more miserable in terms of Russia's efforts to quell these Muslim disturbances on the southern border. So why shouldn't we view Putin's interest as any more than, not that I'm any fan of his, but he's doing precisely what I'd be doing if I were him.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, how can you not be sympathetic to his position? So just in closing, is there anything that can be done? Is there a deal anywhere that can be made, particularly between the U.S. and Russia?
Well, I think in the end, the question is, can the Russians be pretty confident that in that a Sunni terrorist mob would not overrun and rule Syria. And if you can convince them of that, I'm sure the discussions are on the table. I think from their perspective, if they can keep Assad in power through some political transition that doesn't cause the Shiites to lose power, they're in favor of it. Mm. But other than that, I would be hard-pressed to be convinced myself that Putin is going to make nice with the Americans just because Mr. Lavrov has a nice relationship with Secretary Kerry.
Well, Ambassador Ginsburg, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, who's a former presidential advisor and United States ambassador to Morocco. He served as a legislative assistant to Senator Edward Kennedy, special assistant to the Secretary of State, deputy senior advisor to the President for Middle East Policy, and a special U.S. coordinator for Mediterranean Trade, Investment, and Security Affairs. He serves as a special advisor to the Department of Defense Special Operations Command and an advisor to the United States Department of State on outreach initiatives to the Muslim world. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about the annulment of the genocide verdict in Guatemala.